to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level.
On the line today is Michael Vaughn. Mike is in his fourth year as Director of Women's Ice Hockey Operations at Merrimack College, where he also serves as the team's strength and conditioning coach. He has previously worked with the United States Women's National Hockey Team and has spent time as a strength and conditioning coach at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning. Mike is here to discuss how he goes about putting together a sports-specific training program, the challenge of load management in ice hockey, the critical importance of monitoring student-athlete well-being, and how data can be used to empower student-athletes. So let's get started. Here's your host, Benjamin Jensen, head of First Beat Sports USA.
Hello, everybody. This is Benjamin Jensen. I'd like to welcome you to this second episode of the First Beat Sports podcast with our guest today, Mike Vaughn. I just want to get straight into it. Go ahead and start by giving us some background on your career, kind of what you specialized in and just your path to Merrimack College.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my undergrad at Fitchburg State, played football, Division III football out there in Central Mass. It was kind of my first exposure to strength and conditioning. After that, I graduated, got an internship with Mike Boyle at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, got hired on after that, was there for the last 6 years. On top of that, I did a short internship under Sarah Cahill at Northeastern University. And then from there, I got the opportunity with Mike and the rest of his USA Hockey staff to work with the women's national team. This was 2013, so right before the Sochi Olympics, all the way through 2016. And it was through USA Hockey I made a connection to Merrimack College. So we were working a camp together with some of the coaches from Merrimack and coaches throughout the country. And one of the assistant coaches at Merrimack, he offered me an opportunity to come work at Merrimack. He knew I wanted to get into the college game. And it was pretty interesting. He walks up and he was just like, Mike, I know you're interested in hockey strength conditioning. Do you want to come work at Merrimack? I went, yeah, absolutely. Like, what's the role? Things like that. And he's like, well, you'd be hired as our director of operations and you'd be our strength coach. I went, yeah, absolutely. I'm in. One question is, what is a director of operations? Because I had no idea at the time. but I knew it was my opportunity to get my foot in the door, and it's been a great 4 years so far.
Okay. So you kind of just skipped the whole interview process and just got straight into it.
Yeah. So it helps knowing people. Definitely. And I had a really good relationship with Brent Hill, who at the time was the associate head coach. And he got me in contact with Aaron Hamlin, who's the head coach. And it just set things up really well. They were looking for somebody to fill a role, a very unique and dynamic role. And just based off my past and my experience, they thought I was a good fit.
All right. So that takes us kind of to the next topic of exactly what does the director of ops do? And how do you kind of juggle having both those titles, the director of ops and strength and conditioning?
So at first I thought it was going to be really difficult, but it's actually really simple. The two complement each other really well. And as a strength coach, it's almost an ideal role where I'm always with the team, whether it's on the road or here at the rink, I'm at practices, games, and I'm really intertwined within our coaching staff. We have formal and informal meetings pretty much every day. And then the really cool part is I coordinate all things in terms of travel. So whether it's what hotels we're staying at, what buses, what flights we're taking, what the travel itinerary is. And I think the best thing of all is I coordinate all of our meals. So whether it's pregame, postgame, they're always going to eat something that's going to help set them up for success.
So in the sense you literally skip the middleman that you don't have to ask or recommend what you want. You're running the show and calling the shots as far as that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Our coach, Erin, she's done a really good job just trusting me and kind of handing the reins over to me. And she has her input for whatever she may think is important. And then we just have some really good dialogue and we're able to get things done really successfully.
Okay. Kind of what do you need to consider? Because you're working just with the women's ice hockey program. So what do you consider when tailoring your strength and conditioning program?
So for me, health is our number one priority. If my goal is throughout the year, throughout the course of the 4 years here, players never miss a practice, they never miss a game, never miss a training session. And if we get that done, then we've had a really successful job. Now, obviously, things are going to occur that hinder that, but that's our number one goal. From there, I just want to maximize players' athletic potential, because if we can maximize that off the ice, then our coaches can maximize their hockey playing potential on the ice. And then in terms of like programming and things like that, like squat, jump, sprint, throw, all your basics, we just do things really, really well, making sure that technique is hammered and instilled in everything that we do. We're a very triplanar, heavy, unilaterally influenced program. And it's been through my time with Coach Boyle that I've learned that, and we've had a lot of success with it.
you're in a really unique situation that you've been with the team since they made the jump from a club to Division One. Over this time, how has the programming changed, or have you kind of had that program in place and you've just kind of built upon it going on?
So I think what we've really done is since the inception of the program 4 years ago, we've kind of just run it just like I would run things with the U.S. national team in my previous stint. Like, we have very high expectations. And again, we keep things really simple and help the athletes truly understand why we're doing what we're doing. And we found that the more they know and they understand, the more success that they've had both on and off the ice.
Okay, and with ice hockey being such an anaerobic-based sport, kind of how much focus do you put on the aerobic-anaerobic split you get?
So we use it a ton. It's kind of my basis for looking at how difficult our practice was that day or how difficult our training session was in the weight room. And when I'm looking at practice, like, oftentimes throughout the week, we'll look at that split and be like, all right, if we're very anaerobic today, then we'll probably have to back down a little bit tomorrow, and kind of just really set us up for success for the weekend.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the third season working with First Beat Sports System? Is that right?
Yeah, okay. Third season with First Beat.
Okay. And just to ask the obvious question, why First Beat? What made you choose to work with us?
When I was first looking into what system we were going to use, I asked a lot of my friends, whether it's in the college and the pro setting, and First Beat came very highly recommended. Coaches couldn't say enough good things about it. And we found just the last 3 years that there's great value just in what we're using it for. And I mean, cost-wise, it's been fantastic and can never overlook that. But the user interface is so simple, so easy to understand. Players are able to understand it. They get their training reports every day. And then our coaching staff, they fully bought in and they understand why we're doing what we're doing, and the simplicity of it is huge for us.
You mentioned the athletes buy-in. Can you just go kind of dive a little bit deeper into how has the buy-in been with the players and the coaches? How did it start? And what are you using on a daily basis for the coaches and athletes?
So the players see great value in what we're using it for. At first, they were a little confused about what we were doing, why we were doing it, why practices were changing so much from year one to two to three, and now year four. And they see that everything that we're doing has their best interests in mind. And then we have a really, really smart team. I think team GPA is 3.8, very high, very intelligent group. And the more information that we're able to provide to them, the more that they're seeing the value in exactly what we're doing. So they get their daily reports every day. We started off a few years ago. We weren't giving them to them because we didn't want to overload them with information. And then I found that players were asking questions pretty much after every training session, wondering what their heart rates were like, what their workload was. So we just made it really simple and just like, all right, if you guys want your reports, I'll teach you how to read them. We'll go over it at the beginning of every year. And the more questions you guys can have, the better it's going to be for you. They get those reports every day and they look forward to it. And it's funny, whenever I don't have internet service at a rink or something like that, they're asking, what were my numbers? I didn't get my report. What's going on? And I was like, just let me get some internet and those reports will come right in.
So it seems they really enjoy the reports then. It's just part of their daily schedule then to look at those.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of those, kind of on the reports and the data, so what are the most important data points that you're going to use with the program?
So for us, we look at two measures that are really important for us. We look at our 7-day trim total to kind of look at what's our week looking like. Because we have a number that we found that we kind of want to hit before we get to the weekend. And if we're there, we're in a really good spot. And then we look at daily trim per minute. So we kind of break it down as to how difficult each practice and training session was. And over the course of the last 3 years, we figured out kind of where success lies with our program on a Monday through Thursday scale. And we tailor practices around those numbers. And usually we've had a lot of success with it.
So when you have these back-to-back games, do you see a pattern of which game is going to accumulate the larger trim score?
Yeah, so the numbers are relatively close, but this actually surprised me a little bit. Is Friday, the first game of the weekend, is usually where we see the higher numbers. In very special cases, Saturday may be some higher numbers, but overall, it's often on Fridays.
Do you have any idea why that might be? Because that's actually, I asked that because a lot of other coaches I've spoken to have all seen the same thing.
Honestly, I think it leads into how well prepared we are for the weekend. So if we're fresh coming into Friday, then our players have everything that they can give. They sell out. And if they're at their freshest, they have more to give. And then after playing a really hard game on Friday night, they got to come back. And oftentimes it's not even 24 hours later. We'll sometimes have games at 7 o'clock on a Friday and then 2 or 4 o'clock on a Saturday. So their recovery status hasn't fully set in. And if they sold out, gave everything they had on Friday, then there's almost not as much to give on Saturday. So I think that's why. Not 100% sure, but that's the feeling I kind of get.
I think it was pretty close to what the others have said. There's no crystal clear answer, but yeah, definitely a lot of different ideas about that. Kind of on that same topic now, the back-to-back games. So morning skates, do you apply them? Are they needed? Is it part of your program?
I think it depends. We do morning skates on Friday games, typically, and a lot of it depends on what time we play. So there's often times where we're playing at 2 o'clock on both Friday and Saturday, and we'll have like an optional morning skate where if the goalies want to go out and take some shots, players want to go out and just move around, we'll do that. If we're on the road on an overnight trip, like if we're up at Vermont or Maine or something along those lines, we'll travel up on Thursday, get a practice in at their rink. And then if we're playing mid to late afternoon or a night game, then we'll get a morning skate in on Friday. And then Saturday, it's if we have stuff to go over and we have enough time, then we might run one, but it's not something that we constantly do. Typically on a Friday, but it's always up for debate.
If you did do a morning skate, what kind of trim values do you see? And is there a number that you absolutely try to stay below?
We stay really low. It's typically a very flow type practice where we're going over some systems. Players aren't moving a ton, just kind of get out, get their legs under them. And it's a lot to do with like the exposure to the rink and kind of get them in the right mindset. So trip numbers are very low. And if they're out on the ice for more than a half hour, it's actually a big surprise.
Okay. Do you have any examples of like data influencing some training situations, whether it's load management, minimizing practice time, or even training periodization?
It happens all the time. So we build our practices kind of around our trim values and what we're looking for. So we actually have a drill breakdown sheet that we've recorded over the course of this year, where every drill that we've ever run, we have a numerical breakdown as to what the trim value is and what the trim per minute is, so that our coaching staff can then build a practice based off of whatever their goals are for a certain drill. They can pick and choose what fits the energy system they're trying to look for. And I think most of all, it really opens up an opportunity for more dialogue. That's one of the things I found with First Beat is the questions we're getting now are even more in depth. We're able to do a little bit more and we're able to attack the really small pieces of our game that I think make massive differences.
Okay. And on that same line, has there ever like been a red flag situation where you've actually just shut down either a player or even the team practice once you saw certain numbers hit?
Yeah, so this is actually kind of a funny story. Our coaching staff thinks it's pretty funny. After after coming back from winter break, we had a practice on, I think it was the 26th of December this year. And it was our first practice back. Our players had been traveling in early that morning. And we had kind of a goal to hit where we wanted to get them going. We had a game coming up in a few days. We had big travel down to Princeton, which is like a 4 to 6 hour drive for us. And we got to the end of the practice and we were at a pretty high trim number for what we were looking at. And we didn't successfully complete a drill and finish it. And the players were all like, no, we want to do it again. We want to get it right. And I'm standing up in the stands, just waving coaches down and be like, nope, we got to end it right here. We can't run through that again. Like, we want them to have legs for tomorrow. And players were like, no, we got to get it done. I was like, nope, listen, we're shutting it down. And like, we'll see what happens. And coaches got a good laugh and they're like, all right, whatever Mike says, and we'll go from there. So it ended up working out in our favor. Players felt great the next day and we were in a really good spot.
I have to say, that's just a breath of fresh air that you have that kind of communication line with the coaches. And obviously, you have that trust that they're said, nope, if he says, we're done, then we're done.
Yeah, it's been great. It's these last 4 years, Aaron and I are the only ones who are the original two still left on the staff from the first year. And our relationship is fantastic. And then with our two assistant coaches, Steph Moberg and Chris Hall, like, it's been awesome. We have such a good relationship where we're talking all the time. We meet and just sit and talk after practice and set up the plan for the next day. And it's a good friendship that we have here.
Great. Kind of looking at the wider picture for the moment, when we're looking at athlete well-being is a pretty hot topic amongst college sports. What kind of protocols do you have in place at Merrimack for the hockey program?
So we use daily wellness questionnaires that players fill out every morning when they get up. And as long as they get that information filled out prior to coming to the rink or the weight room for the day, that's all I'm looking for. And it's short. It's 5 questions. Just kind of looking at, do they sleep okay? Are they eating well? What their soreness levels like? And then a couple more in-depth questions that it doesn't even take them 2 minutes to fill out. And then we also do a session RPE for both practices and for lifts, so that we're able to kind of track, like, if our goal is to have practice difficult level of a 3 out of 5 for a given day, and players come in and be like, well, that was the easiest practice of the year, that was a 1. It's like, all right, well, we missed the mark on that one. So where did we miss it? Was the rest time too long? And it just leads to more conversations. So the more questions we have, the better our conversation, our dialogue becomes.
Do you guys apply the quick recovery test at all?
We do. My favorite time to use it is during winter break, because we're here and there's pretty much no other team outside of men's hockey and then the two basketball programs here that are on campus. So there's no classes going on. So players are able to get that, come in. We have the same practice time every day. They show up, we run the QRT, and then from there kind of look at what numbers are like and how things are going. And then depending on the rest of the year, it's a lot is dependent on class schedule. So sometimes we have players running in and out from practice, and it's tough to get that QRT in, but we try and do it at least twice a week. Obviously some things come up and they change, but yeah, we throughout the year, it's at least twice a week, and then winter break, we try and do it every day.
Okay, yeah, just a bit off the topic here, but I wanted to ask your opinion on the future of NCAA hockey. Do you think it's ever truly going to make it out west? Now, for example, we see that Arizona State has jumped into the Division I fray.
Yeah, I think you never know. The game's growing really, really rapidly. I think at this point, definitely with the influx of Arizona State, and the more exposure I think teams get, the more the game is growing and the more the fan base is increasing. I mean, especially on the women's side, if you look at the last two Olympic gold medal games between US and Canada, they were two of the most watched events at the Olympics. And then you look at NHL All-Star Weekend, you have Kendall Coyne and Breonna Decker participating in the skills competition and competing with and beating some of the best players in the NHL. Like, the game is just, it's constantly growing. And the more it grows, the better it is for our sport. And the more exposure it gets, I think the more teams will end up growing out of it.
Okay. And getting back to just the practical side of First Beat. So how much time does the system add to your weekly workload as a strength and conditioning coach? Because that's obviously one of the main concerns when people are looking into the system is, you know, what is this going to do to my weekly training or my weekly workload?
Honestly, it might add 15 minutes a day for me. That's about it. Between the initial setup at practice and then after practice, just breaking down some of the numbers, it's so simple that I think you can bite off more than you can chew and it becomes very cumbersome. But for what we figured out, it's maybe 15, 20 minutes at most for me.
Okay, so if I am that new coach who just got the system, I'm going to call you up. What advice are you going to give me as far as, you know, what metrics should I start with? Year one, what am I going to look at?
All right. So first off, it's definitely don't do what I initially did and don't bite off more than you can chew. And then from there, it's talk to as many people with experience as you can. Find just a couple metrics that fit for you. We found, and then through conversations I've had, trimp load and then trimp per minute is great for us. That's what we found resonates kind of the most with both our players and our staff. And then the next biggest thing is under promise and over deliver. If you don't commit too much in terms of what information you're going to give to the coaching staff, like every time that you give them that information, they're going to appreciate it a ton. But if you over promise, then you have to make sure that you deliver.
Okay. And what role do you see technology, not just First Beat, but technology in general, what role does it have for the future of strength and conditioning?
I think it's going to play a big role. I mean, technology is obviously constantly advancing. And then in this field, there's so many coaches out there, so many people who want such few positions that departments are looking for people that have a niche. And if you have something that you can bring to the table, something that you can provide that maybe another candidate can't, that's an opportunity for you to grow and find those highly touted positions. But yeah, the more tools that you can add in your repertoire, the better. And then whether that's First Beat and a heart rate monitoring system, or whether it's using gym wares or Tendo units, whatever it may be, is the more technology grows, I think the more we're going to become reliant on it. But the biggest thing is making sure that we don't lose those fundamentals, make sure we don't lose our coach's eye, making sure that we can have those one-on-one and group conversations and people skills. But yeah, technology is going to keep growing and I don't see it slowing down too much.
And when you mentioned the coach's eye there, actually, that just brought up one point I wanted to ask you too. What would you say to the head coach that he's got the system, says, okay, run the system. I just want to know who's working hard and who's not. How are you going to respond to that?
That's a tough question. I think it kind of comes down to is, do you know your players really well? And if you can look at them and see that they're giving everything that they have in a given drill, and if they're not for some reason or another, it's like, are you opening up the ability to have a conversation with them? Because technology is going to tell you a lot, but it can't tell you as much as that personal connection you're going to make with players. Just kind of ask them, is everything okay? How's their day going? And I think that's where those wellness questionnaires come in great for us. When they say that their stress levels are really high, are midterms going on, or the finals week coming up, like what's kind of going on? Because I mean, overall, stress is stress. And if players are stressed out for one reason or another, whether it's internal or external related, then their performance is going to be affected by it.
So kind of with the wellness questionnaires and then even the First Beat data and reports in regards to the First Beat stuff, has that been an avenue that it's given you kind of, it's helped open up some conversations with some of these athletes?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we do is we roll through those wellness questionnaires every day. So as soon as those come in, I take a look at everybody's scores and see is there anything that deviates from the norm? Is there anything in the comment section that I need to address or ask a question about? Or we look at their first beat scores retroactively and it's like, all right, their numbers were really high today compared to everybody else's. Like, what's going on? Like, do we need to have a conversation about something? And it just, again, it just sparks more questions. And the more questions that we have, the better our communication skills become. And the more the players truly see that you care about them as a person and not just an athlete, and the more that they're going to believe in and see the value in the systems that we run.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like you've got a great setup. You got a team with a 3.8 GPA, athletes that are interested and want to listen to what you have, and coaches that will actually listen to your feedback as well.
Yeah, it's a great spot. And I think everything we're doing here is fantastic. And I only see things going up from here.
Great. Well, that's all the time we've got for today. I'll let you get back to prepping for next games you've got coming up. Thanks again, Mike, for taking the time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ben. Happy to do it.
And last but not least, just a big thanks to our listeners out there. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you won't miss the next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533. Or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.